Blog Talk Radio.
It's simply a page turner. You see her, a professional woman with a doctorate working for the federal government, and you know she has it all together. And then you read her book and see the other side of Dr. Gina Myers, the side that's been broken and bruised but not defeated. This is a very personal story, a walk by faith, as her book title suggests, about love, faith, and domestic violence in a hauntingly powerful eyewitness report. Hello, I'm Carol Copeland Thomas, and this edition of Focus on Empowerment will draw you in, make you listen, and compel you to share this program with others. Hello, this is Carol Copeland Thomas. Thank you so much for joining the show. I hope that you are well wherever you happen to be, whether you're listening live or listening as an archive. Certainly, I hope that when you listen to this program that you will share it with somebody who needs to hear this message. And before we get to our special guest, I just want to encourage you to go to our website, www.msfconnect.com. That's for the Multicultural Symposium Series, www.msfconnect.com, and sign up as a member of the Symposium Series. I am excited about the October 27th conference that's coming up. It's right around the corner. We are lining up speakers as the days progress, and it's going to be a very diverse group of professionals from all walks of life talking about their particular disciplines from a multicultural perspective. The conference will take place on the campus of the University of Massachusetts. We're hoping to have it again in their student center. Lovely room last year. We partner with the school, and we certainly thank Dr. Keith Motley, who is the chancellor. And so we're going to be back there and have a dynamic time next month. Your membership includes that conference. It also includes our webinar series that we started this week. And I'm excited about the topics that we're going to cover every month, a different type of topic, covering all kinds of issues. Diversity 101 was covered on Tuesday of this week. I was the featured presenter. Next week we have Latinos or Latinas or Hispanics in the U.S., Canada, and beyond. We'll be talking with Georgiana Melendez with the Commonwealth Compact and diversity expert from the West Coast, Carlos Conejos, who will also be the co-presenter on Tuesday, September 27th. That's a part of the membership. Members-only section will open up on the weekend, where whatever you miss will be at the members-only section of the website. You can go to www.msfconnect. Find out all about it, sign up either online or you can download the form that is on the website, and I think you are going to just be in for a real, real treat. We're also going to do a program in the coming weeks, probably entitled Why Social Justice Matters More, in light of the execution last night of Troy Davis, a very troubling situation where this young man, 41 years old, literally went to his deathbed pleading innocence, looking right at the victim's family and telling them that he said, God bless you, and I was not the shooter. And just the huge worldwide cry for a stay of execution that did not happen last night. We'll talk more about that in the next couple of weeks, because social justice is definitely a part of multiculturalism as it is a part of everyday living. But speaking of social justice and being empowered, our show is all about empowerment. I'd like to bring on the airwaves now Dr. Gina Myers. She is a longtime federal government executive trainer, corporate speaker, presenter, working for several agencies. And I'm delighted to have her on. Her book, A Walk by Faith, is just a powerful reminder that all of us have lots of crosses to bear, and she certainly has had her share. Dr. Myers, thank you so much for being a guest on my program.
Glad to be here, Carol.
Well, you know, I read the book this summer, and then I came back and prepared for it for our program, and it's a kind of book, it's so well written, but just so compelling, because first of all, you say, my gosh, this woman has been through a whole lot, and she's talking about it. She's actually documenting what she's been through, the relationships with her family, with her parents and her brothers, and then her boyfriends and living in Spain. And why, when did the urge to write this book hit you, Dr. Myers?
Well, this book had been in my consciousness to write for many years. I'd probably say around 1990, 95, but I was concerned with other career goals and put it aside, didn't really realize that. After I completed my doctoral degree in 2005, it didn't stop. Friends, acquaintances would say, you've got to write this book, you've got to write this book. So I finally sat down, because I had just finished that rigor of writing that requires when you do a dissertation and all that research.
Right.
But my writing habits were really good, and it was like, okay, what do? I need to write something. It's like, oh, the book. I need to do the book. So immediately after, I believe I began 2 months right after I received my doctoral degree, and I started writing the book on weekends. And it was something that I really just felt compelled to do. The writing just flowed from me. I would say a prayer before I sit down and write at the computer, and because my prayer was about being able to communicate to as many people as possible, but also not offending the individuals that went through that journey with me. There's a chapter devoted to my dad, and I had to balance being truthful and honest in my growth, but not offend and hurt my papa. And so I prayed about that and really worked hard at putting the right words on the page to further inspire women who have gone and are dealing with domestic violence, as well as writing for not sensationalism, but for the authenticity, being able to heal those that read the book.
Yeah, well, I can tell that the rigor of writing was still in you, just in how the book has been written. And again, as I said earlier, it's really been a page turner. I'm sitting up here, and I'm in Dorchester, Massachusetts, in the Boston area, in a prominent hotel. And I'm just sitting up here, just thinking about how many of the people who are in this lobby have experienced what you have experienced. I would imagine probably 10% or so of people, the guests who are actually here at this hotel, well-dressed women, you look at them and you think they have it all together, and you have no idea what they're going through. Next month is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and there's a website we'll share with you a little later on where you can go and get more information along with Dr. Gina Myers' book. It's also Diversity Awareness Month, too, which we'll talk about in the coming weeks. But I want to go back to just the foundation of this, because you've been hit with this, I guess, on two fronts. Your family, your parents, just seeing what they lived through, the grind of making it every day, raising six kids, and then unfortunately identifying the men in your life that, you know, where it just didn't, it was not good, it was not healthy. Talk to us about early years with your family and your parents in the Washington, D.C. area, Dr. Myers.
I would say my early years initially started out up in Pennsylvania, and it was a time where I feel I have in common with a lot of women, where we received those duplicate messages, or there was ambiguous messages about being, you know, assertive, but at the same time being subservient and serving in order to be in relationship, positive relationships with men. And it was really trying to sort out all those messages. And I, at the time growing up, I had, my mother was the kind of woman who was a career woman, but she was also trying to be that superwoman and did it all. And so she went out of her way to be the best a mother, and in some ways I feel subjugated herself to lower levels in order to still be that great wife. And it's so sad that women during that period had to try to balance those things. And in observing that as a young girl and as a teenager, you know, I got that ingrained message early on, you know, the men come first, you're second. And And I finally, you know, and that's what I was living. And I think so many women still today get that message very subtly through the media, through relationships. And, you know, now we have television shows with that seem like they're very retro, and women being still being objectified and not being a partner to the man. And it's so prevalent. Few people talk about it. It's the big secret in our family and in many families. Mm-hmm. And the statistics are much lower than the actual incidences because of this secrecy and not acknowledging what's going on. Did I answer
that? That's, I mean,
you
did. That's you're sort of breaking up. I'm not sure if someone is trying to call in or not, but you did answer the question, because those messages are loud and clear, and sometimes they are absorbed and sometimes they're ignored, and it goes across the spectrum. You don't have to be a person of color to get those kind of messages. They're there in every kind of family group. Would you not say so?
I agree, and it's also, I feel it's an issue of each person has a different level of self-esteem. I had very low self-esteem. Where that came from, I don't know. Maybe that was what drove me to accomplish so much, to feel that my work is my accomplishments, and I know a lot of women do that. And so it's that subtle message. Now, I've encountered other women who have said, you know, gosh, if I were in that relationship, I'd smack them and walk away, and that would be it.
Mm-hmm.
But understanding the deeper psychological needs of a person, it's easier said than done. If I had very strong needs about wanting to be loved and accepted at all costs until I had my spiritual awakening that, you know, your worth is intact regardless of what you do. You are worthy, and that's very empowering and strengthening. And I think more women need to hear that message of just being, you are worthy, and you don't have to take negative behaviors from your partner. You just don't have to.
Right. So do you feel the relationship that you saw with your parents, you mentioned in your book that they argued quite a bit, they would, you know, fight and make up, and, you know, I'm sure a lot of kids in the family, and you're the old, I believe you were the oldest, and so you absorbed a lot of this, you know, what kind of impact do you think that your relationship your parents had on you?
Oh, definitely, so much. By the age of about 7 years old, a child has learned their fundamental values for relating to others from their family. And I saw the fighting, much of the fighting, I'd say most of the fighting, 90% of the fighting was over finances. There was not enough money. We were poor. So there was a fight about everything, not having food on the table or whatever. And so I internalized that very early on. If you look at human psychology, that's when all those internal messages are inbred, and they're pushed to the subconscious. And until you go through counseling or therapy in your later years, will you ultimately uncover those hidden messages and reshape your life. And I encourage so many black families to go through counseling. We have this stigma about counseling and therapy, but we need to get those services and talk through those deeper issues that a professional knows how to get to, in order so that we can see them and stop repeating that same old cycle over and over again, because it is a cycle, and if you don't acknowledge you'll continue it on with your children and your children's children, because we've got to break that cycle.
Well, you were blessed with good genes from the point of view of being talented and smart. You worked hard in school, and it paid off. And you talk, and I don't want to spoil it because I want people to get the book and read it, but you had your experience and exposure in Spain, where you visited and traveled and lived there for a short while after graduating from college, and then you came back and entered graduate school, and then you met Doug. Talk to us about Doug and the relationship you had with him.
Doug was that exciting, brooding man that I think a lot of women are attracted to, unfortunately. We need to be attracted to those kind nerds, but we don't go after those men.
Oh, yeah.
And it's sad, but I had had all of this book knowledge, and my parents pretty much kind of sheltered me because everything was about education, get your education, you date later, that sort of thing. I went to an all-girls high school, so I was very inexperienced when it came to dating, relating to men, looking at those signals of control and jealousy. And I met him when I first moved to Washington, D.C. It was the first year. I met a lot of people because I love people, and I don't try to hang in just different circles. I really want to get to know people in all walks of life. And so he was just a fascinating person because he had lived a totally different lifestyle than I did, and all this stuff.
He was that bad boy, like you're saying.
Boy,
and
now
like
I can
the bad boy.
I'd probably say he was a thug, you know. I mean, let's just call him for what he was. And that intrigued me. I wanted to know what that life was about. And he knew how to romance me and woo me, and it was all that mixed with the controlling. I thought if a man told you what to wear every morning and inspected you, that was a sign of love. But now I realize that was a sign of control and possession,
mm-hmm.
like the initial step. There was finally, after about a year of being involved with this man, my gut told me something is not right. Something's wrong here because I was feeling that oppression, and I was feeling stifled, not blossom, and it was all because of the control and the behaviors that I easily submitted to. And when I started to, I don't know if he read my mind or not, but when I started to realize this relationship was not going to work, that's when the abuse, beyond just the verbal abuse, the physical abuse escalated.
Yeah.
And by that time, I was deeply in love with the person. And when someone turns on a dime just as quickly with aggressive violence, it really psychologically does a number on your head. I mean, really, really.
I mean, you were punched and kicked.
I was strangled.
Abused.
I was
strangled.
I was almost drowned in the bathtub. Name it, I experienced it. I go into work, you know, with a busted lip and just say, you know, it's because I was jogging and I fell or whatever. And work was my escape away from the home life. But I had gone through it all. And when you go through the verbal, the slow, subtle verbal abuse, and then the escalating physical abuse, you really psychologically become mentally frozen and incapacitated, and you lose any hope and sense of escape because you feel stuck. And that's the psychology of it, and people don't understand that. Think about it. When you totally love somebody, immerse yourself totally, you are giving every part of you. And then for someone in the course of a day or two to radically change and become the aggressor against you, that really does psychologically damage you. It's traumatizing.
Well, in many ways, you lose your identity because you're so immersed in keeping the relationship and the love lines going that you lose yourself by giving yourself over to someone else. That's the sad part. I want to skip ahead because it got worse. You move, there was the transition, and then what happened? I mean, this is what blew my mind. Then what happened, Dr. Myers? We're talking to Dr. Gina Myers, and her book, A Walk by Faith, illustrates and talks about her life, professional, career-minded, working for the federal government, highly educated, studied and traveled, and then at night, a totally different person. So what happened with Doug after you realized he was really not good for you?
I remember I really started to plan mentally my getaway, my escape, and this is why I titled the book A Walk by Faith, because by that time I had been involved with him for a period of 5 or 6 years, and repeatedly he had said he was going to kill me, strangle me, shoot me, set me up with cocaine where I go to jail. I was never going to get away from him, and I truly, truly believe that. But something in my mind, I just started planning and taking this risk, saying, I got to get out of this, I got to get out of this. I don't feel I am meant to live like this. And I stopped this one day and just said a prayer. Lord, I said, I'm going to turn my faith over to you. I said, if I live and get through this, it's because of you, because I had no faith in myself in getting through. And that's why I started my walk by faith and walking away from that situation and reshaping my life. And I walked faith to do it because I knew I was going to be a goner. I was going to be dead. I did escape that night, stayed with a girlfriend and had to keep, you know, where I lived secret. When I finally, and I also had the help of a domestic violence shelter where they helped me find another place to live. And once I had successfully left and found a new place, he found out where I lived and would stalk me. He stalked me for about 2 years. And I remember I would always just see where that's before cell phones, so I'd always take note of where there was a public phone so that I could immediately call the police in the event something happened or he'd get too close. But I'd notice, you know, eyes behind me, and I'd see a block back this person following me, and that went on for 2 years. So that was another psychological, stressful part of the life after I met this man. And I survived through my faith and always looking ahead, setting goals. I had a goal of going through all the counseling and going to bookstores and reading every single self-help book I could get my hands on. I had another goal of cleaning up my finances because my finances were ruined. He was constantly taking money and not paying the bills or the mortgage and going for drugs or cocaine. I set up goals each year and slowly but gradually reshaped my life and did a lot of meditating and prayer and was just shown the right path to take. And I want to share that message with all the women that I know. That's why every October I speak at domestic violence shelters, to give women hope step by step you can do it and reshape your life.
And I think it's important to note that, I mean, this didn't just happen quickly. This was over a period of time. But what's interesting for me is that you were dating, you lived together, the violence continued, it would stop. I think you moved, and then you got married. So, I mean, he followed you, but you got married, and then it resumed again. Is that not true, Dr. Myers?
Because there was a certain point where I decided to, you know, go to counseling because I still had belief in this relationship. My belief is, so determined to make the best of things. And agreed to go to one or two counseling sessions, and he agreed to be the changed person, the new man, and I gave him another chance, you know, believing that people can change if they decide to. But this was all just a sham, and he reverted back. When we got married, and he reverted back to the same behaviors immediately. And by that time, realizing I was married and feeling further trapped, it was like, okay, this is it. This is final. There was no hope in this situation, and so I had to ultimately walk out on faith because I'd given this person too many chances to change.
So, I mean, it was drugs and alcohol and women, and he had a stepson. I mean, he had a son, you had a stepson. Just a lot of dynamics. His mother wasn't much help.
A lot of drama. I went through a lot in trying to save this relationship, and there were a lot of things to contend with, but I was of the belief that this was another black man, that as a black woman, I wanted to support and be there for him because I know life is difficult for us and for a black man in securing employment, that sort of thing, the kind of things my father went through early on as a child, you know, in and out of employment. And so I could see those same parallels, and I said, you know, like my mother did, she hung in there. I said, I'm going to hang in there. But then it got to a point where it was either death, my life quality, my value, or his. And part of it was, I even had a vanity aspect. I said, I don't want to be 40 or 50 years old and scarred and beat up looking. So that was another part of it, because in the book I even talk about when I first moved to Washington, D.C., this was very prophetic or symbolic. I encountered a woman who looked like she had been abused or just beaten up the day before, and our paths crossed at the intersection and our eyes locked. And it was just, you know, it was almost like a movie, the metaphor and symbolism through it. That shows that I have a lot of passion about things. I do nothing halfway, but that was a point where I had to really seriously just cut my losses and had to become more self-aware, dig deep and look.
Do you do you think if your mother had lived and your mom died when you were young, you were a young adult, do you think if your mother had lived that perhaps her guidance advice would have led you in a different direction?
That's a superb question, Carol, and I would hope so, in the sense that my mother was a brilliant woman, and she learned and she would evolve, and I saw her evolve in the short 17 years that I interacted with her, and I believe she would have evolved to another stage and possibly would have probably left my dad. Who knows? She was one of those
interesting
to make the most. You know, she saw the passion in life and would make the most, because she ultimately was an administrator at a Head Start program, and, you know, gone back to school.
Right, gone back to school and still raised her family and the like. And we just have a few minutes left, Dr. DeMyers. I wanted to ask you, you know, have you in recent years, or what became of Doug, you know, how did you get to become such a very strong, fortified woman in the midst of horrific circumstances that you lived through and endured? And most importantly, how in the world did you maintain your job?
That was a blessing to have work that I enjoyed, that I could totally immerse myself. I was a true workaholic. That was my escape. And thank goodness I did that, because he tried to really make that difficult, would harass me by constant phone calls and that sort of thing. But I think ultimately it's really just important that you find your value, and you find out ultimately what you're worth. People look at me now and say, "Oh my gosh, you're so strong, you're invincible." I would have never figured that out. I believe things happen for a reason, and God, we have our path, and I just feel it was meant to be. I feel that I was meant to be transformed to the other side of strength, and if it meant going through what I went through, then that's what it required, because of what I'm continually giving back. And
you're empowering other people with your very credible, real story. Just very quickly, have you run it? What happened to Doug after your divorce?
The last time I believe I ran into him or saw him, but I don't think he recognized me, I'm not sure, but this was about 8 years ago, and he was living on the street. He was living on the street. I recognized him because I remember his walk, and I looked at his face, and he looked like he was 30, 40 years older than he actually was. And before publishing my book, I said, "Oh my goodness, he's going to see this book and really try to stalk me and find me and kill me." And I had a concern about that. But when I saw him, and I prayed on that, and when I saw him on the street, I said, "Okay, thank you, God, for helping me see that there is nothing to fear here." So
right. Well, you certainly have taken your courage to a brand new level. And for those who want more information or to get a copy of the book, go to Dr. Myers' website, and that is www.GinaMyers.com. DrGinaMyers.com. That is her website. And then there's another website for domestic violence. It's a long one, so let me read it off to you very quickly, because next month is Domestic Violence Month. www.DV as in violence, D as in domestic, V as in violence, A, M as in mother, dot V as in violence, AWNET.org. It's a long one, but if you go to my blog, all that information is there at tellcarol.com. This has been an extraordinary interview, Dr. Myers. Thank you so much for being a guest on my program. You have inspired me as you inspire others. Keep the faith. We hope that if you have friends out there and you've listened to this program, you can share this program with others. Until we meet next week, enjoy your week, and empowerment definitely begins when you believe in yourself. We will see all of you next week.